WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. We had our windiest day in 2 years yesterday in the D.C. metro area. Reagan National tracked gusts of 62 miles an hour, according to ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett.
Anything above 58 miles per hour, that is technically a severe thunderstorm gust wind, even though these weren't really technically associated with thunderstorms.
Yesterday's winds knocked down trees. Thousands of people in our region are without power this morning. Dominion reporting more than 7,000 customers in Northern Virginia with no power. About 400 Pepco customers in D.C., Montgomery, and Prince George's counties are out. And about 900 BG&E customers are out, most in Anne Arundel and Howard counties. New mask rules go into effect in D.C. today, and they're good news if you're fully vaccinated. You won't have to wear a mask if you're walking through a common area in an apartment building. You will have to put one on if you spend more than a few minutes in those areas. Also, if you've been fully vaccinated, you can show your vaccine card and skip the mask inside a business if the business allows it. But if you're taking public transit, you'll need to wear a mask, vaccinated or not.
The existing federal mask mandate for anyone on public transportation was supposed to expire May 11th, but the Transportation Security Administration says they're extending it through September 13th. That means if you want to get on a train, bus, or plane in the U.S., you're going to have to mask up or possibly pay up. Violations of the mask mandate are punishable by fines up to $1,500. Airlines and their unions have been pushing for an extension of the federal mask rule. They see it as a stronger alternative to imposing rules themselves. Jill Nato, Fox News.
A big shift in the message Virginia's Department of Health is giving primary care providers distributing vaccines. Virginia's vaccine coordinator, Dr. Danny Avula, says they have been telling them, use what they get the week they get it, because the vaccine was in short supply.
But now that we're on the other side of the supply-demand curve, providers should know that it's okay for them to have vaccine and to be able to carry it over into the next week and just to use it per the manufacturer's guidance. So that's a big shift.
He says in coming weeks, more vaccines will be given to primary care doctors in an attempt to get vaccine-hesitant people to get the shot. It's Derby Day as 19 horses make the run for the roses in the first leg of horse racing's Triple Crown.
Essential Quality remains the favorite heading into today's 147th running of the Kentucky Derby. Running out of the 14 post, Luis Saez taking the mount for the undefeated colt.
This year we have a pretty nice horse, so we just pretty excited. We can't wait to be there.
The field going from 20 to 19 as King Fury was scratched yesterday due to high fever. Meanwhile, others to watch, Medina Spirit. Odds makers have Rock Your World out of the 15 and Hot Rod Charlie out of the 9, set to give Essential Quality a run for his money through 1.25 miles in the fastest 2 minutes in sports. Matt Napolitano, Fox News.
In other sports news, the Nats beat the Marlins 2-1. The Wizards beat the Cavaliers 122-93. Traffic and weather next on WMAL. WMAL traffic, here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Prince George's County, on the outer loop of the Beltway, all lanes are blocked right now. This is in Greenbelt between the BW Parkway and 201 Kenilworth Avenue for a serious accident. In Prince George's County, on Route 50 between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, all clear eastbound and westbound. At the Bay Bridge, 2 lanes are headed east and 3 lanes are coming west. And if you happen to be traveling between the two beltways on the BW Parkway or on 95 in Prince George's County, it's all clear northbound and on the southbound side. No accidents or construction. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A cool start on this Saturday, but things will warm up nicely back into the upper 60s to near 70 degrees. There will be a touch of a breeze today. Northwest winds around 10 to 15 miles per hour. Later on tonight, mainly clear. Low temperatures back in the 40s in the suburbs, low 50s around town. A big warm-up is in store for your Sunday. Temperatures reaching the mid-80s under mostly sunny skies. Low humidity, though, with dew points still in the 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update. 105.9
FM, WMAL. It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax TV and Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
President Biden, first 100 days in office, addresses the Congress. You've seen many State of the Union addresses and presidential addresses to the Congress. Your assessment of President Biden's performance?
Well, obviously he has to be held to a different standard because there were select members of Congress there seated to abide by social distancing rules. So there was not the usually packed house, the special guests in the gallery, and the people who fought so hard to get those cherished seats and get a view of this historic event. He laid out an agenda that took just over an hour. In fact, it was 1,000 words longer than President Obama's first address to Congress and 1,000 words shorter than President Clinton's. But the agenda there is the standard message, the mantra of big government. He talked about more money for education and for the kids. What this means is a womb-to-tomb education program like that that's been used in many European countries so far. School starting earlier with children at age 3 and then staying in school even longer as preparation for college. This has been brought up in different states, including Maryland nearby, and many parents have objected to the idea of a longer school day. We'll see what happens when it tries to be enacted at the federal level. He spoke about his American Rescue Act and what it has done for the COVID-19 virus and our eventual walk back from this very sad and dark period in our history. Of course, Republicans were quick to point out he gave no credit to the previous administration or Operation Warp Speed. And, of course, his infrastructure package. This is something that the president still has yet to give a final price tag on, but he says we'll put Americans back to work in different jobs. And then the green economy. Again, all of it was a message about the role of government in the lives of people. One commentator said we had a Declaration of Independence that launched America in the 18th century, and now, years later, with this address, Joe Biden has called for a declaration of dependence on big government.
From your standpoint, was there any bipartisan or unifying outreach from the president?
No, there wasn't. He talked about how he and Vice President Harris have spoken to Republican members of Congress, and in fairness, he was talking to Congresswoman Liz Cheney at the end of his address, Congresswoman Nicole Malliotakis, both Republicans, and it certainly looked good, his engaging in conversation with Republican House members. But at the same time, it all comes back to the fact 5 seats separate Republicans from Democrats in the House, and there's very little bipartisanship. In the Senate, the vice president has to cast a tie-breaking vote unless West Virginia's Joe Manchin goes the other way with the Republicans. So we still see divided government and no substance yet on bipartisanship.
So when you have a presidential address like this, the opposition party has a response. Rarely gets attention, generally forgotten within 24 hours. Well, that all changed this week, John, with the response from South Carolina Senator Tim Scott. We're going to remember that response and the response to the response for months to come.
Senator Scott certainly shook things up, and he took a role that is very intimidating to people in the opposition party, giving a reply to the President of the United States with the presidential seal, with the scenario of the House chamber, and, of course, the power that comes with that. Most people who rise to it, be they Democrat or Republican, just simply cannot compete with the most powerful man in the country. I remember the late Senator Fred Thompson of Tennessee did very well, and people suggested he run for president. Congresswoman Kathy McMorris Rodgers gave a touching talk weaving in national policy with her responsibility as the mother of a special needs child. Well, Senator Scott certainly was on the same level as those past great responders and may have exceeded them. The only black Republican who, in the United States Senate, talked about big government, what it does, and how individual freedom helped him rise from a broken home and poverty into the United States Senate. He cited his grandfather, who lived to be 94 years old, and watched his family go, Senator Scott's memorable words, from cotton to Congress. And he also talked about voting and how much has been said that Republicans are trying to keep people from voting. He doesn't see the new Georgia law that way at all. He sees it as expanding voting, and he also knows that for taking the positions he has, he's been called the N-word and an Uncle Tom by progressive Democrats who claim to be the best friends of civil rights. Again, those are Senator Scott's words, not this reporter's. In the end, in a speech that barely went over 10 minutes, the senator captivated the nation with a personal story and a pitch for smaller government and freedom. It was a home run performance, and in the end, Senator Scott's going to be asked to speak in a lot of places, and he'll have a long victory lap.
A rising star in the Republican Party. Well, over the past year or so, it seems like every other Friday, we are announcing that yet another Republican will not be running for re-election, but we turn the tables. You have a Democrat that's not coming back?
It happened Friday night, Rick. Democratic Representative Sherry Bustos of Illinois' 17th District, that's the Quad Cities, announced that she would not seek a sixth term next year. And there's a little surprise over that. The former chairman of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee barely won her fifth term. By a little over 52% of the vote, Ms. Bustos defeated Esther Joy King, conservative Republican, Christian, a veteran of Afghanistan, and now a tax attorney. In other words, someone who could just be your neighbor, not a career politician who came out of nowhere and nearly pulled the upset off in this Democratic-leaning district. The Rock Island Democratic chairman, Derek Jones, told reporters he did not yet have the name of a likely Democratic candidate. But for now, Republicans see this as a net gain and one more step toward the few seats they need to make Kevin McCarthy Speaker and Nancy Pelosi the ex-Speaker.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, as always, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Rick. And remember, everyone, we're here for you because of the First Amendment to the Constitution. No matter how unpopular opinions get or how controversial, freedom of the press persists. Let's keep it that way.
All right. It is 7:16. It's the Saturday Morning Update. We'll talk to Cheryl Atkinson next, but first we're off to the WMAL Traffic Center. Al BD is there this morning.
In D.C. on 295, 395, and 695. So far this morning, I'm not getting any reports of any construction being set up for weekend road work. I don't have any reports of any accidents, so you should be traveling at the posted speed limit. On the Virginia side of the Beltway, all clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. In Fairfax County on 66, nothing to report eastbound or westbound. And in Virginia on 95, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, there are no delays northbound and southbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A cool start on this Saturday, but things will warm up nicely back into the upper 60s to near 70 degrees. There will be a touch of a breeze today. Northwest winds around 10 to 15 miles per hour. Later on tonight, mainly clear. Low temperatures back in the 40s in the suburbs, low 50s around town. A big warm-up is in store for your Sunday. Temperatures reaching the mid-80s under mostly sunny skies. Low humidity, though, with dew points still in the 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
Still at 46 degrees in the nation's capital, 717 on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
It's the Saturday Morning Update. Glad that you've joined us this weekend, and we are joined by Cheryl Atkinson. You can catch her tomorrow morning on Full Measure on ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. Cheryl, good morning.
Good morning.
You have a story on your website. It's an exclusive investigation at CherylAtkinson.com, and you look into the origins of COVID-19.
Well, I tried to bring some clarity and documented and cited everything with published material that they can check out themselves, because there have been rumors and disinformation and misinformation, so you can count on this one. And it talks about that really the scientific consensus, according to those I spoke with who worked firsthand on this topic, the consensus has been for a long time that it did come from the Wuhan lab. But you've heard quite the opposite, I think, mostly in the media and from certain public health officials. Number two, you'll see that certain public health officials who are working hard to debunk the question of whether it came from the lab are tied to the lab themselves, including Dr. Fauci. That turned out to be true, with a commitment of U.S. taxpayer money to controversial research that's been going on with the Chinese at this lab to, in a nutshell, take a bat coronavirus that was not infectious in people, and this research made it infectious in people. They have human airway cells put in mice, and they tampered with or manipulated the genes of this coronavirus to make it infect people so that they could build a vaccine for it. That's been going on for quite some time, vaccine research. And the idea is they want to get ahead of the next pandemic, anticipate what could cross into the human population, and with the drug companies, make vaccines and have this stuff ready. So that's the kind of research they were doing. And you'll see in the story that I talk about the genetic analysis that was done of COVID-19 way back in the beginning by the United States and the conclusions that they found. So there it is in black and white. Finally, after a lot of months of me talking to a lot of people and doing quite a bit of research and investigation, the documents, you can actually see what's documentable versus the rumor.
With China being a competitor and an adversary in foreign policy, one question that would arise would be, why do the research in China instead of having it done here, let's say, at NIH or the CDC?
Well, it was a partnership. So U.S. scientists funded by our tax money through NIH and Dr. Fauci's Institute and USAID and a nonprofit funded by the Defense Department, all kinds of different methods you'll see. This was a partnership where we were conducting the research with partnership from the Wuhan scientists, the Chinese scientists. And the recurring question is kind of the one you asked. Scientists universally that I spoke to wanted to know why this was allowed. China has an active bioweapons program. They, of course, have civilian research, but there's also a parallel military application to the research that they do. Why we would partner with our biggest world competitor and foe on this very risky and dangerous kind of research, by all accounts, is an open question mark. A lot of people think that's very ill-advised.
And are you able to find out when this started, sort of under whose watch?
Well, let me say that I think this is something that goes on irrespective of who's in the White House. It's not that sort of thing. This is research that's funded and pressed by our establishment scientists in the government, likely the vaccine industry that wants to create these vaccines, and well-intentioned scientists who genuinely are trying to get ahead of the next coronavirus. But we do know that the most controversial study that was done in the 2015 time period was, I believe, a 7-year study that was allowed to continue after 2015, even though similar research was ordered halted temporarily in the U.S. because it's considered so dangerous. For the reasons I talked about, it's called gain of function, because the scientists are taking a harmless virus in people and making it harmful to people for the purpose of creating therapeutics and vaccines. And it was deemed for a period of time to be something that's not safe to be done here. But NIH gave an exception to this study that our U.S. scientists were doing and that we were funding with the Chinese. So that's why that research continued. And in the 2015 publication, you'll see at CherylAtkinson.com, if you want to click the links, they successfully talk about having been able to manipulate the bat coronavirus so that it became infectious to people. And that concerned a lot of scientists who actually wrote an objection to it in a published publication of a medical journal and said this is something that shouldn't be allowed, and yet it did continue. So there's a lot more to it, but again, you can count on what you read in this investigation versus the stuff that you've heard. One big takeaway, when you hear the media and certain public health officials say the lab theory has been debunked, that's provably false. And whoever's saying that is putting out propaganda for on behalf of whoever doesn't want us to talk about this.
Let's turn to Full Measure. That's tomorrow morning at ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. And one of the stories that you have on is about Ashley Babbitt. Of course, she was the unarmed Trump supporter shot and killed by police at the U.S. Capitol riot. Many unanswered questions, but very little, if any, attention has been given to the story by the network news outlets or the major publications. But you are looking into it tomorrow.
Yes, you know, I wanted to find out why so much secrecy surrounding it. Unlike other police shootings, and in this case of an African-American police officer of a white woman who was unarmed, we don't know the name of the officer. We don't know a lot of details. We do know prosecutors are not going to charge the Capitol police officer. They haven't named him, but they said that they take at his word that he was genuinely either concerned for his life or the life of others and acted in good faith. A lot of people agree with that. But, of course, there's another side of people say that that was an excessive use of force. And now the attorney for Ashley Babbitt's surviving husband is about to file a big lawsuit, a civil lawsuit, which is separate from the criminal charges that are not going to be filed. We'll hear from both sides about what the officer may have been thinking versus what the attorney for the Babbitt family says should have and could have been done. And we'll go over all the videotape and let people see for themselves.
Again, it's just surprising that there was no further interest in that story. I haven't seen it.
You know, it's interesting because not only did the Babbitt family attorney say that if this had happened in different circumstances or somewhere else, that this would absolutely have gotten the kind of attention other police shootings have gotten. This one hasn't. But even the person that I spoke to who defended the officer and basically spoke on his behalf as saying what he might have been thinking, he too said he was surprised that this did not get the sort of attention from civil rights groups and from social justice groups and others that you might think to have an unarmed person, regardless of what they were doing, to have an unarmed person that was apparently posing no immediate threat to anybody be shot and killed by a police officer.
CBS 60 Minutes has taken some heat recently for its story on Ron DeSantis. You're going to take us behind the scenes with some history with one of their longtime producers tomorrow.
Yeah, you'll love this interview. It's with Ira Rosen, who's a former colleague of mine from CBS. He was Mike Wallace's producer for decades. Came in as a young man, learned all the tricks from Mike Wallace, was abused, as were really many producers, by Mike Wallace in terms of the kind of boss that he was. And he's going to tell us about some of the amazing stories, what he knows about the Epstein case and videotapes that may exist, and some of the behind-the-scenes competition and backstabbing at that legendary broadcast we all know so well.
Very interesting. That's tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock, ABC 7 on Full Measure. Cheryl, thank you very much, as always.
Thank you. Have a great one.
And you too. It is 7:26. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We've got 7:30 news coming up. We're back with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and K.T. McFarland. So stay with us on the Saturday morning update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. Winds whipped in our region last night at more than 60 miles an hour in some places. Reagan National saw gusts at 62 miles an hour, according to 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett.
This is the strongest gust in D.C. since May 23rd of 2019. So, yes, it has been several years since we've had these kind of winds.
Trees across our region fell and power was knocked out for thousands of people in our area. Here's the breakdown of customers out by utility company. Dominion, about 7,000 out in Northern Virginia. BG&E, about 1,200, with most in Anne Arundel, Prince George's, and Howard counties. And Pepco, about 400 out in D.C., Montgomery, and Prince George's counties. D.C.'s loosening mask restrictions effective immediately. Last night, the mayor issued a new executive order that businesses can let in fully vaccinated people without masks if they show their vaccine cards at the door. Fully vaccinated people also won't have to wear masks if they're passing through a common area of an apartment building.
Also starting today in the district,
we will transition from a registration requirement at our district-run sites or high-capacity sites to walk-up, no-appointment-needed vaccination site.
Mayor Bowser says that applies to 11 sites. WMAL Sports, the Nats beat the Marlins and the Wizards beat the Cavaliers. The 147th running of the Kentucky Derbies today. Traffic and weather next. WMAL Traffic, here's LBD in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
I wanted to give you a heads up. Long-standing accident in Prince George's County on the outer loop of the Beltway. All lanes on the outer loop are blocked in Greenville between the BW Parkway and Kenilworth Avenue. If you're traveling between the two beltways, the Baltimore Beltway and the D.C. Beltway, it's clear on the BW Parkway and on 95. In Prince George's County on Route 50 between the Beltway and Annapolis, you shouldn't find any delays eastbound or westbound. And at the Bay Bridge, two lanes are headed east and three lanes are coming west with no delays on either shoreline. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
The high winds are gone. We will see some breezy conditions as we head towards your Saturday. Winds northwesterly around 10 to 15 miles per hour. Some stronger gusts at times, but they will diminish to the afternoon and mild temperatures expected, highs near 70 degrees. To head later on tonight, mainly clear. Lows in the 40s in the suburbs, 50s around town as we head into your Sunday. A big warm-up's in store for the end of the weekend. High temperatures in the mid-80s under mostly sunny skies. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett at the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
It's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Rick Fowler with you, along with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research and the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
Quite a little story going on, a little drama in Iran these days. They have a presidential election coming up in June.
Yeah.
There was a leak of a telephone interview with Mohammad Zarif. Of course, he's the foreign minister, and he's pals with John Kerry.
Right.
John Kerry gets wrapped up in this because in the leak, Zarif says that Kerry told him about the Israeli strikes in Israel, and the question mark around John Kerry now is, what did he tell him, if he did, and when did he tell him? So help us to understand the whole leak situation. Now, one question on the leaks that I have for you to start things off is, there's speculation the leak came out of Iran because of the different parties, the different factions in the presidential election, but the leak could have come from somewhere else?
Look, I think those who probably benefit the most, and rightfully so, would be the Israelis. And I think the Israelis have much better intelligence on Iran than we do, and I think there may well be an aspect of that that they're involved in, which is good. But to your point, yeah, I think there's a potential that whoever's putting the information out is basing it on the internal elections of Iran. But let's focus on what's most important for us, which is John Kerry. The evidence is John Kerry may have leaked this during the time when the Obama administration, were seeking to finalize the joint agreed-upon framework, also known as the Iran nuclear deal. John was seeking aggressively a legacy for the Obama administration. So that's the context of where this may or may not have occurred. The bottom line is this. We cannot afford to not investigate. If you're going to investigate people for having a tambourine in the Capitol during the 6th of January, you got to investigate John Kerry for treason if this happened, because this is something that cannot stand. This will damage our relationship with our allies in the region. And Rick, look, at this point, the Saudis are seem more directly able to lead the issues in the Middle East than we are. And we could well see an alliance between the Saudi Arabians and the Israelis as the preferred method of trying to bring peace to the Middle East to continue the Abraham Accords over us at this point, based on the first 100 feckless days of this administration.
Yeah, I was going to ask you what the impact might be on the Abraham Accords.
Well, it's not good. And that's where, again, because this was an effective policy, if you just remove Trump from the title of it, it's the best way to go. Unfortunately, yeah, no, I'm serious. I mean, I'm not saying it to be derisive of the president either, President Trump. I'm just saying that this was an effective policy put forth by the right people in the administration, by, you know, Mike Pompeo and company. It works. And simply because the Biden administration continues to act politically on everything they touch, our allies in the Middle East see this, and they're just going to go their own way if we don't continue as a nation to lead that. So that's going to be the consequence. And again, this goes back to John Kerry. John Kerry has to be investigated, and there must be a resolution if he did this or not. If he did it, then there needs to be something done to hold him accountable.
I was laughing because what you were pointing out just shows that Trump derangement syndrome has not been cured in this country, even though he's no longer the president.
That's correct.
It is alive and well. Well, speaking of Trump derangement syndrome, Biden's been blaming him for all the problems at the border, and things don't seem to be getting any better there.
No. So, look, I was on a call earlier this morning with the former Assistant Secretary of Defense for Western Hemisphere, Sergio De La Pena. We spoke specifically about the issue of the removal of a policy he was the lead on regarding working with our Latin American allies to create barriers and gateways for people to come through. So that policy of having people kind of held where they're at in those Latin American countries, remember, most of the people coming across the border, Rick, are not Mexican. They're other nations, and we were working very effectively. That policy ended the moment the Biden administration came in, and now we see the dismantling of the wall. So, again, we're seeing things which were actually having an effect reversed, and now we had a record number of people coming across. DEA is now coming up with new ideas of how they can stop the fentanyl. So it's all created by the change of policies from the Trump administration, just basically abandoning effective policies in the name of doing something different politically because the Biden administration wants to go a different direction. That they've created themselves the crisis at the border.
And what are you hearing on the defunding or even elimination of ICE?
So, yeah, President Biden brought this up in a speech in Georgia, and he says basically he wants to remove it, end it. And it's like that's the primary enforcement mechanism of the law that protect the border and go after the illegal immigration issue. So I don't know what he's thinking. But to the idea of removing that based on politics would be completely insane. I don't know what he's thinking. I don't know. Again, it may simply be a political statement, but one that is very dangerous if he ever decides to actually do that.
You know, I'm not sure that it's really what he's thinking anymore. I think it's what the people who are running the show are thinking. That's what seems to matter these days.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
I mean, they've swung this guy so far to the left. I mean, you know, AOC has given him an A-plus rating these days, you know.
Pretty frightening, yeah.
All right. Also, one more I wanted to get in with you real quick.
Yeah.
The Secretary of Defense, Austin, speaking on Pentagon focus and priorities. What did you make of what he had to say?
He had a speech where he laid this all out, and what was ironic is there really wasn't anything to lay out. It was he didn't even name. He said we want to focus on the Pacific and do a number of things to strengthen our alliances, but never once mentioned the threats. He never once mentioned China or North Korea as the primary threats. And my experience is, Rick, in dealing with senior officers like the Secretary of Defense and others, if they cannot name and clearly articulate what our focus is, that's going to be bad both diplomatically regarding the adversaries not basically understanding they're not going to be held accountable. More importantly, there's the old adage of, the fish rots from the head. If the leadership is not clearly focused on what our threats are, the Defense Department being very large tends to meander off task. I'm just saying, and I think a lot of people know what I mean when I say that who live here in this town. We need to have someone who's willing to articulate clearly what our adversaries are and what we intend to do. That was not done in this speech, and I think it's a very bad sign, only being 100 days in, where we don't have a Secretary of Defense clearly defining what we're going to do and being prepared to act if necessary against our adversaries. It was not a good speech, and it was not a good path to telegraph where DOD is going.
So what do you make of the messaging we've sent out around the world in these first 100 days to, let's say, our adversaries? What do you think they make of all of this?
Well, they see a lot of the things we see domestically regarding Biden. Remember, every adversary watches everything that goes on, and they don't necessarily only focus on what's said. One of the notable things about the Russians during the Cold War is they recognized when Reagan fired the air traffic controllers during that strike, he was not a man to be messed with. So that's something that came out after the Cold War. So just remember that as a lesson, that the Russians actually recognized that Reagan was much more of a dangerous man, not by his bellicose rhetoric, but by his actions of firing air traffic controllers within our domestic sphere. So that's when they see Joe Biden not doing well domestically, I think they recognize there's opportunities for misbehavior across the board. So that's what I'm worried about.
And what's coming up on the Thought to Action podcast this week?
So we're doing a number of things, but first I'd like to talk about our 82 Candles celebration for Dr. Herb London. We're doing a celebration of his life. It's on our webpage, londoncenter.org, and we'd like to have people, contribute to help light a candle, 82 candles, noting that our founder, Dr. London, would have been 82 years old this year. And so we'd like you to check that out. So thanks for having me on, Rick.
My pleasure. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and the London Center for Policy Research. Appreciate it. 7:47, Saturday morning update on WMAL.
In D.C. on 295, 395, and 695, including the tunnels and bridges, there isn't any construction. I don't have any reports of any accidents. You will be at the posted speed limit. In Virginia on the Beltway, all clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. In Fairfax County on 66, nothing to report eastbound or westbound. And on 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. On the northbound side, all lanes are clear. And on the southbound side, all lanes are clear. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
A cool start on this Saturday, but things will warm up nicely back into the upper 60s to near 70 degrees. There will be a touch of a breeze today. Northwest winds around 10 to 15 miles per hour. Later on tonight, mainly clear. Low temperatures back in the 40s in the suburbs, low 50s around town. A big warm-up is in store for your Sunday. Temperatures reaching the mid-80s under mostly sunny skies. Low humidity, though, with dew points still in the 50s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Lee at the StormWatch 7 Weather Center.
47 degrees in the nation's capital, 748. 7:50, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland joins us. She is President Trump's first Deputy National Security Advisor and the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. It is always an honor to have you with us, KT.
Well, it's an honor and a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. In your book, you wrote about the cycles that America goes through. And we've now gone through the first 100-day cycle of the Biden administration. And as you look at where we are and where we've been and where we are moving forward, put it in perspective for us.
Yeah, I mean, I've been around for 50 years at this game, so I do see things in the longer view of history. I think America goes through political revolutions every 40 years or so, and it's when a status quo, the governing status quo of both parties, no longer works for the majority of the people. So the people toss them out, get new people in, take the country in a different direction. And that's what the 2016 and 20 elections were all about. 2016 was the Republicans rejected the status quo, and they got Trump, and they got very different policies of low taxes, pro-economic growth, no more fruitless foreign forever wars, and also to put America's interests first with our trading partners. Then in 2020, the people, the establishment struck back. The combination of the media, pollsters, social media, they elected Joe Biden, not because they were really against Trump's policies, but they wanted to calm things down. That the constant caustic debate in Washington, they wanted to just stop the drama. They thought, everybody in the country who voted for Biden thought they were voting for a centrist Democrat. But what they got was something very different, was a far-left radical socialist government, a group of people who want to radically transform American culture, society, education, and the economy. And frankly, they want one-party rule. They want an authoritarian government. They want to be in charge forever. They're going to rewrite the Constitution to pack the courts, take away statewide voting, turn it into a federal thing, abolish the Electoral College, and give the 700,000 workers in Washington, D.C., almost all of whom work for the government, they want to give them statehood. And then they get two senators. And this whole movement, this far-left radical agenda, is helped by corporate media, social media, corporate oligarchs, and all the elites. It's the woke culture and the mob thinking, and they plan to ram through all this stuff as quickly as they can, and then America is going to be so changed, it's going to be great. People always think socialism is going to be great. Every time it's been tried, it's been a disaster. So this group of people, leaders, have taken a huge political bet that the American people are just such sheep. They're going to go along with these cancel culture, woke mob, defund the police ideas. And they've also taken a huge economic bet, and I think this will get them in a lot of trouble, that the $6 trillion budget will be completely and overwhelmingly successful and lead to prosperity for Americans. I think it'll be a disaster.
Well, it seems that we sort of had a bait and switch here in the 2020 election. Biden was going to be the moderate, but, I mean, they're so far off the left side of the picture here. What do you think happens next? I mean, as you say, it's a big bet.
Well, look, it'd be great if they're right. I'm pretty sure they're going to be wrong, because in American history, or in world history, but particularly in American history, every time we've raised taxes like this, we've gone into a recession. Every time we've had this kind of massive government spending ramped up all at once, we've had corruption. And there were two things that happened this week that I really took. I mean, nobody paid a lot of attention to them, but they really struck in my mind as apocryphal. In his address to Congress, Biden admitted that the U.S. is responsible for only 15% of greenhouse gas emissions, and the rest of the world, 85%. So think about that for a minute. Even if we cut ours to zero, while the rest of the world, especially China and especially India, they don't cut theirs, or they don't cut theirs for at least a decade or two decades, or in China's case, they don't plan to do much of anything until 2060. Well, we are now staking the future generations of Americans with crippling debt and a lower standard of living. And it's not even going to make a real material difference in climate change. So, because these other countries, they're not going to cut back. I mean, they sort of vaguely promise they'll think about doing it later, but they're certainly not cutting back like the United States said. So I think that Joe Biden has inadvertently said what the real problem is that by doing these crippling things to our economy, you know, just cratering the oil, natural gas, and coal industry, the automobile industry gone. By these kinds of changes, he's going to cripple the American economy, reduce us to very lower standard of living, and at the same time, you know, other countries aren't going to. It's not going to make a hoot of difference to the environment. Now, the second thing, though, that came from a very different place was this man by the name of Steve Rattner. I know him from New York. He's a liberal Democrat, multimillionaire investor. And he had a very successful career, partners with Mike Bloomberg. So this man was one of the leaders of the Democrats in the finance department. And he ran the auto bailout after the 2008 crash in the Obama administration. He was on MSNBC on Morning Joe, and they said, well, what do you think about Biden's great program? And he said, well, I believe in everything. But I got three concerns. One, I'm worried about inflation. Two, I'm worried about the debt and the deficit. But what I'm really worried about is that the Biden administration won't be able to execute all these spending plans. It's $6 trillion sloshing through the economy. And he said there are 76 new programs. All are going to have to be created from the beginning. There's going to be corruption, mistakes, false starts. And he said if the American people have given the Biden administration this kind of money and trust, and the Biden administration can't execute it, if there's no demonstrable happy news change in their lives and their economy, then those people are going to vote, and it's going to be a decade before the progressive movement gets back into power. I think that's what's going to happen. I mean, if I look at history as any guide, the Carter administration, Jimmy Carter, Joe Biden, same guy. It's just Jimmy Carter was the first one to raise the taxes, to go crazy over environmental replacements, and, you know, syn fuels was his thing. They're going to have synthetic fuels. And now Biden is doing the same thing. I think it'll have the same result. as Jimmy Carter had. The economy will have very high unemployment within 2 years. We'll have low economic growth. We'll have a lot of inflation. And we won't have made a big material difference in all the things that we think we're doing, which is the emissions and the Green New Deal stuff. And as a result, the Republicans will vote in Republicans in the midterms and a Republican president. We got, you know, we had to have Jimmy Carter and all the screw-ups to get Ronald Reagan, and I think that Joe Biden is going to be a one-term president because Republicans will sweep in 2024. The problem is so the hangover effect will be massive, massive debt. Do you know this program is going to cost every man, woman, child an additional $1,500 per year? That means $4,000. Do you know Family of Four who says, I'm really happy to turn over $4,000 on this big bet that it's going to change the world? I don't know. I think it's going to turn back to bite them.
Oh, and you add the collateral damage of inflation, and then if they hike the capital gains tax rate, there could be a sell-off on Wall Street. And even if there isn't a sell-off, if you go to sell your stocks after the capital gains rate hikes, it's going to be a ripple. Just as you say, it's going to be a big effect, and it's not going to end overnight.
No, and it won't end right away. I mean, right now there's a lot of happy fives, high fives on the back. Oh, Biden's so popular. This is great, that wonderful speech. This is a sugar high. This is like when you give your kid Halloween candy, all he can eat. What happens afterwards is a huge crash, because when the temporary checks that everybody's getting, when those are spent and there are no new jobs, that's when you have a crash. And you know, look, I hope I'm wrong and that they're right, but I don't think so. And I think that the American people are really going to feel big pain about 18 months from now. Mm. But we'll wait and see. The good news is after Jimmy Carter, you got Ronald Reagan. So after Joe Biden, I don't know. I'm looking around for my Ronald Reagan now.
Oh, I think there are a couple of them out there.
There are a lot of good ones out there, right?
Oh, yeah. KT McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. And check the book out, and you'll see the real story of the cycles America goes through, and it'll help to chart the path as we go forward. KT, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station.